chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, you've heard about the 1961 Freedom Riders all over the roads and the terminals of the South and the jails of the South. And some of you may remember some of them spent some time in Mississippi's legendary Parchman Prison, a plantation prison. Well, now we're able to experience a lot of that on the stage as a result of the Playmakers production of The Parchman Hour. This is a world premiere production. Play is written by a friend, local performer and writer, Mike Wiley. And Mike is joining us to talk about The Parchman Hour, along with Doug Bynum, who plays John Lewis in this production, and Kashif Powell, who plays Stokely Carmichael. Welcome to all three of you. This is exciting.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Mike Wiley, I've got the benefit, I guess, of having seen the production right before the opening.
And you saw the final preview.
Yeah, the final preview, and it's a moving production. Tell us about how you got into this.
Well, when I was a little boy, when I was sitting with a very good friend of mine, Bill Svano, a couple of years ago on his porch in Kennebunkport, Maine. He actually lives right across from the Bush compound, but I don't hold that against him. I was sitting with him, and he said, you know, you really want to learn about the blues, you learn about Mississippi, and when I was in prison in Mississippi, and I said, hold the presses, right there, hold the presses. I thought I'd known him fairly well, you know.
You never knew he was in prison?
Never knew he was in prison. I knew he sang with the rooftop singers. He was a playwright, a screenwriter. He wrote episodes of The Bionic Man, you know, $6 Million Man. He's had an incredible life, very full life, and he's still out there writing plays and screenplays. And little did I know that he had been in prison in Mississippi.
And as a civil rights worker, or for doing something bad?
That was my question. I knew he probably didn't do anything bad. I thought, well, maybe, well, he was a folk singer, so maybe he, you know, played in the wrong joint or got arrested that way. But as he got deeper, and, you know, for those folks who don't know the rooftop singers, you got to know that Bill Svano is, I guess he's probably easily 6'6", 6'7", white guy, very soft-spoken, quiet. So when he said that he would have been in prison, that really threw me. And when we got into it, I realized that the reason he was in prison was civil rights work. And it made sense. It made sense to me that he had been doing that, because he is that kind of individual. He's quiet about it, but I know that he stands up for what's right. And so we got into the conversation, realized that Freedom Riders was a conversation that needed to happen not just between he and I, but needed to happen nationally. And little did I know, at that time, there was going to be a 50th anniversary celebration this entire year. But I knew at that moment that I wanted to write about his time in prison, as well as the other Freedom Riders' time in prison, as well as the freedom movement in general there in 61.
So what next? So that idea floats around your head for a few minutes, a few weeks, a few months, or did you just sit down and start writing right then?
No, actually, it's probably rolled around in my head for a few months, and then I became a visiting professor at the Center for Documentary Studies over at Duke. Just doing missionary work over there, and
we listen. We have, Michael, we got some Durham listeners. We have to walk carefully.
I understand.
Line.
I understand. No, they're wonderful folks over there.
Well, particularly at the Center for Documentary Studies, that's missionary work for all of us, and I think everybody in Chapel Hill. It's a bunch of Chapel Hill people who run that anyway.
It's the truth. They're great folks over there, and they gave me wide berth to work in my class on what other subject matter I wanted to work on. Now, don't get me wrong, it's also a joint professorship with UNC. And so I would teach at UNC and I would teach at Duke, taught the same subject matter, documentary theater. And in teaching documentary theater, I decided I wanted to work specifically on the Freedom Riders and perhaps research and eventually write a play dealing with the 61 Freedom Riders. Now, the students were willing to do it. The Center for Documentary Studies was willing to support it. And eventually, over the course of a year, through research in the class, also research with Tim Tyson, who is also over at the Center for Documentary Studies, and my sitting down over the course of the summer of 2010 and writing the play, came back in the fall of 2010, play in hand, with willing students, put it on the stage in the Keenan at UNC with the help of the Department of Drama.
Now, I want to talk some more about that, but you brought with you Stokely Carmichael and John Lewis.
I did.
You know, the actors who are playing them, and I wonder if you'd introduce them and maybe you all can have a little conversation about the role of these two really famous people, well-known even today, and what role they play and what challenges placing them in the play gave to you as a playwright?
Well, first of all, let me introduce them. Kashif Powell, who plays Stokely Carmichael in The Parchment Hour, as well as Doug Bynum, who plays John Lewis in The Parchment Hour. Now, let me give you a little backstory here. When I sat down to write The Parchment Hour, I could have gone in a number of different directions, but I wanted to focus on their time in prison, but also the journey itself. Now, there are quite a few civil rights icons and veterans that were in Parchment. I could have focused on Fred Shuttlesworth or James Bevel or any number of individuals, but I knew that I wanted to somewhat tell the arc of the civil rights movement in a way through some of the characters. And you've got Stokely Carmichael, who was a Black Power advocate, and you've got John Lewis, who was a peaceful Gandhian activist, right there in the same cells.
So they were really, you didn't place them there, they were really there.
They were really there.
And in contact with each other in Parchment, as much as prisoners can be.
As much as the prisoners at that time in that prison could be in contact with each other. And so very few people realize that over the course, if you're not a historian perhaps, over the course of the civil rights movement, John Lewis and Stokely Carmichael butted heads, and they butted heads often over methods and the movement.
You know, this is, I don't want to interrupt you, but
no,
this is
please.
My story. My brother-in-law's just, and my sister spent time down in Southwest Georgia on a SNCC project later on in the, like in the after, 1966 maybe. And so the tension between Lewis and Carmichael developed again in that context. They were removed from it, but these were white kids who were going down, or white college, seminary students going down to work on a SNCC project in Southwest Georgia, and they're moved by both the activism of SNCC and also by the Gandhian-like magnificent role of John Lewis. So they get down to Southwest Georgia, and at that moment, the Stokely Carmichael and the SNCC people have decided that it just doesn't work to have white people involved in trying to mobilize black people. So all that makes sense. John Lewis, on the other hand, continues to believe that it's got to be a multiracial, peaceful. And so these white kids get caught in the middle between these two visions of how the civil rights movement. So
exactly. It's all layered in there. And what I attempt to do in the Parchment Hour is layer that tension within the 2 hours of the play. That is to say that this doesn't stop here. These issues aren't going to stop here in 61. They are going to survive throughout the movement. And I thought the best way to steer that argument in the various directions was to have John Lewis and Stokely Carmichael have that dialogue there in prison. Perhaps dialogue that they didn't have at that particular time.
It developed there. We got to take a break, we're going to delay the introduction of Stokely and John Lewis until after the break, and we're going to continue to talk about the Playmakers' groundbreaking world premiere production of Mike Wiley's The Parchment Hour after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're visiting with Mike Wiley about his world premiere production with the Playmakers of the Parchment Hour, and he's brought with us the actors who are playing the parts of Stokely Carmichael and John Lewis. Kashif Powell's playing Stokely Carmichael, and Doug Bynum is playing John Lewis. And Mike Wiley, during the break, you got these guys to agree to give us a sort of preview, a little insight into a part of the play.
One of the great things about using primary source documents and resources like the autobiography of John Lewis and the autobiography of Stokely Carmichael is I'm able to pull together a scene that could possibly take place between the two men using their two philosophies. That is to say, that Stokely's philosophy being, yes, in this moment we might be peaceful, but tomorrow we might not be. And John Lewis, his philosophy being, in this moment we are peaceful. Tomorrow we will be peaceful. We will always be peaceful because that is the only way this movement will work. Now, what you're going to hear is how that scene could possibly play out and does play out in the Parchment Hour between John Lewis and Stokely Carmichael.
Oh, wow, this is really great because we talked about before the break, this becomes a very significant historical problem for
absolutely.
Civil rights workers activists about what approach to take.
And what it does is it shows folks that the civil rights movement was not this monolithic movement of African Americans all moving in the same direction, wanting the same thing, and doing it in the same way. And this is a slice of that information that folks need to understand about the civil rights movement. So let's just listen to this, yes.
In 1955, I heard Martin King speak on the radio. I was only 13 or 14 myself, but I was riveted. He had managed to persuade 50,000 Montgomery Negroes to boycott with nothing but simple eloquence and plain words. But it wasn't just talk. It was action. Action of a different kind, fighting of a different kind. These folk weren't retaliating with their fists. They were speaking with their feet. Now, I didn't know a hair about nonviolence or passive resistance. I just knew that violence sickened me, but there was something about this kind of protest that awakened something in me.
Spiritual evangelism, the Montgomery bus boycott, the merger of two foreign philosophies, one, nonviolent direct action from India, the other, civil disobedience from the far reaches of New England transcendentalism with black religious culture. Once King cobbled these two together, it gave the Southern colored community a moral philosophy to justify their resistance and the means to execute that struggle. Spiritual evangelism.
I beg your pardon.
I don't see my responsibility to be the moral and spiritual redemption of some lynch mob or racist thug. I'd settle for changing their behavior, period. Morally, legally, even my fist. I leave the saintliness to the more spiritually evolved.
Then you're not embracing true pacifism.
And I don't intend to, Lewis.
This movement is a pacifist movement.
Lewis, you and I may keep our fist lowered today, but these colored citizens of Mississippi, of these United States, may raise them tomorrow. But
violence is a self-defeating prophecy, Stokely.
Violence is a means to an end, Lewis.
You see? It's all about the infighting that happened within that prison system, within that time in Parchman. It wasn't just a bunch of individual civil rights leaders and followers all working together to do the same thing in the same method. There were debates, there were arguments. It all came to, to pass in there that things were going to move in different directions with this civil rights movement. And powerful people were born in that jailhouse. You know, John Lewis was virtually unknown before that prison.
Well, interesting is the presented in the play, John Lewis, although preaching pacifism, had really gotten beaten. You have him beaten up pretty badly on the stage.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's these words are coming after he's experienced the violence from the other side.
Yeah. John Lewis, both John Lewis and Stokely have experienced either in Mississippi, in Parchman, in Alabama, or somewhere in their lives, this kind of the kind of violence that we're talking about. That is to say, the kind of violence that that was inflicted upon civil rights workers at that time period. However, you know, no matter how often John Lewis got beat, he always said the Gandhian way to solve this is to be beat and let the world see that I'm being beat. Stokely Carmichael, quite the opposite.
Well, do you have any other? I mean, these guys. Well, there's a whole lot more to the play and the performance than just the conflict between these two. But do you have any
Absolutely.
Other? Any other anything else to illustrate the this conflict?
But we get there in a number of ways. That is to say, we get to the idea that the movement is moving in different directions. With Gandhian direct action or nonviolent direct action, but we also get there spiritually. You know, there are quite a few individuals that weren't as Christian as John Lewis, they weren't as Christian as quite a few of the other leaders that were in that jail.
A large religious backbone to the civil rights movement, but not everybody was moved by that particular. A church-based.
Exactly. And therefore, because quite a few of those individuals that weren't Christian saw the irony and the juxtaposition between those white Southern Christians and those black Southern Christians, those white Southern Christians that would say, absolutely, you know, God wants us all to live peacefully together, but separately.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And
right,
so,
right.
So again, yet again, through John Lewis and Stokely Carmichael, we have the opportunity to have that argument. And again, we are lucky to have the guys here today to have that argument.
Yeah, you tell us again tell us again about the actors who are going to play these parts.
Yeah, John Lewis is played by Doug Bynum, and Stokely Carmichael here is played by Kashif Powell. And the little backstory on that is I was sitting in Open Eye Coffee Shop in Carrboro in the midst of writing this particular play, realizing that, not like my other work, this wasn't going to be a solo play. This was going to be multiple actors, so I needed to find folks to actually live
a challenge for you
parts.
Because you do it all.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, that particular day, who walks into Open Eye but Doug Bynum, who looks an awful lot like John Lewis. And I remembered that Doug was an actor, and he had just finished graduate school for acting.
And he'd
west.
Already done Playmakers.
Exactly.
Been active in the Playmakers.
So I approached him. I asked him, you know, hey, I've got this role. It's John Lewis. Are you interested? And he'd actually met John Lewis before. I've never met John Lewis before. He'd actually met John Lewis, read the same autobiography I had read.
So y'all were into it.
Exactly.
But you couldn't probably, I mean, you didn't have the Playmakers production lined up. This was earlier on.
This was early on with the student workshop performance that was going to happen through the CDS and UNC's Department of Drama. And in the fall class, around the same time that I was meeting meeting Doug, I had Kashif Powell here in my class at UNC.
If I could just briefly say.
He's a PhD student. What are you doing?
I didn't hold that against him at all.
Well, I found your class because I was taking a class in my own department that got canceled. And I was like, oh my, I need to find this class to fill my schedule. And I saw this performance of history. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that can work. And then,
but and now in what's your field?
Communication studies. I'm a PhD at UNC.
But you're not a regular actor?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to make myself. I'm trying to go that route.
But you're not in the drama. You're not,
not in the drama department. Not never was a theater major. No.
I don't want to. I mean, these words that I'm going to attach are not. They're meant to be positive, but doesn't sound that. But you're an ordinary PhD student rather than in the playmakers drama. Culture.
Exactly.
So you're out of it. But
yeah. In fact, this is my first time on the Playmaker stage.
But not the first time on the stage. You got a resume too on the stage.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So that's but it's been a hobby for you before. Is that?
Yeah. It was largely a hobby. My focus is performance studies, performance theory, gotcha. And so I've always kind of been interested in performance. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I started actually performing on the stage.
Mike Wiley, you found him through your class, but because he was a student in your class.
Student in my class.
When did it hit you that, oh my gosh, he might be right for Stokely?
Well, I have this friend, one of my best friends, was doing a local production of banned books, readings from banned books over at the Durham Public Library. And this is before I'd really gotten to see Kashif perform. You know, and my buddy called me up and he said, "Hey man, I'm doing this thing with this guy. He's so good. You gotta come see him. I bet he could be your Stokely." And I said, "I don't know if I have time to come over and see that." He said, "No man, I think he might be even over at UNC. You need to come over and see this guy, man. He is so good. He almost made me cry the other night. He was so good." I said, "What are you talking? Okay, I'll come over and see him." And so I come over to the banned books thing, and who does it turn out to be but Kashif, who's already in my class.
Oh, wow. So you didn't make the connection until you saw him.
I didn't make the connection until I saw him because my friend was sort of here and there about his description of him. Because I tried to describe Kashif to him. I said, "Does he look like this?" "No, he don't look anything like that." Like, yes, he does. He looks exactly like I described him. But the bottom line is it ended up being Kashif, and I ended up lucking out to have two very great actors.
Well, this is exciting. We need to take a break, and sure. Then we're going to come back and get you to introduce this part of the play and tell us where it fits.
Sure.
So the three of us will be right back after this short break. We'll continue our discussion in the Parchment Hour.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Playmaker's current production. It's a world premiere production of The Parchment Hour. We've got the playwright and director, Mike Wiley, and he's brought two of the important actors, Doug Bynum, who plays John Lewis, and Kashif Powell, who plays Stokely Carmichael. Michael, before the break, we promised that you'd introduce another sort of excerpt from the play.
Well, you know, again, what I try and cover in the play through the use of the dialogue and the ensemble and through movement are issues that will arise in the future of the civil rights movement. So I don't have to tell the whole story of the civil rights movement, obviously, but I just want to throw out those little seeds that germinate so that people understand the roots of certain things that happened over the course of the movement. That is to say, okay, not all of the individuals involved in the civil rights movement were religious, were Christians, and felt that they needed to go the same route as other individuals who were Christians. John Lewis was a devout Christian. Stokely Carmichael was not. And so therefore, yet again, it gives the opportunity to have a dialogue about what it means to be a Christian working against segregation in the Deep South. And these gentlemen, again, have a bit of an argument about what happens? How can people justify
Stokely,
it?
Stokely Carmichael and John Lewis arguing in Parchman Prison.
Indeed.
Indeed.
And yeah. Again, Kashif Powell and Doug Bynum. Doug Bynum playing John Lewis. Kashif Powell playing Stokely Carmichael. Go for it, gentlemen.
Your Christian brethren.
Indeed, they were. They don't know it. They're frauds.
No, it's Jesus who is a fraud.
Don't blame Christ for the Christians.
Y'all believe in the same God, Lewis.
I'm not going any further down this road, Stokely.
But you know what? Weren't they right? If Jesus is salvation, why are you worried about lunch counter segregation? Here's a Baptist from Alabama that used to preach to the chickens. Now I'm asking you a simple theological question. So tell us, Yardbirds, why bother with segregation when all that matters is salvation?
Because segregation is a sin that separates man from God. Not just colored from white. The crucifixion was a lynching, Stokely. The 14 freedom riders in Alabama were crucified to save us from sin, Stokely.
And that is an argument that probably happened over and over and over again, not just in Parchman, but throughout the movement. That is to say, throughout the civil rights movement, arguments like that happen because it's a philosophical conundrum. Wouldn't you all say?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, really.
Did y'all get involved in this? I mean, did you raise debates in your own mind about where you come down yourself on some of these arguments?
Absolutely. You know, because I myself am a Christian, and I have to somehow puzzle out how it is that you can, how it is possible to be both a segregationist and a Christian, you know, because at the same time you don't doubt or question another's faith because that's not your responsibility or your place to do so. But I think that becomes a major responsibility, and then leads you to how you interact with others too.
Wow. Yeah, and I think I myself, oddly enough, fall more in line with the thinking of Stokely Carmichael. Probably.
Oh, is that right? So y'all kind of fall into place.
Well, I think that's largely because Stokely was a philosophy major.
I mean, you can't expect any PhD student in philosophy of communication to be anything other than a skeptic about everything.
This is true. But me and Stokely, well, we've read a lot of the same things. And so it's for me, it was really easy to, I guess, be persuaded by his line of thinking.
Well, that's kind of exciting. So we could unleash you all without a script, and you could have the argument.
We have it out.
Well, part of the I don't want to leave behind the serious parts of the play. I think we could talk about forever, really, mm-hmm. because we're not going to solve those things. But the play wouldn't work if there weren't not only some tough intellectual issues to deal with or historical issues to deal with, but part of the idea that there's fun everywhere, even in Parchman
Certainly.
Prison. And so, Michael, talk to us about some of the energy that you've put into the play, how you do that. What are the problems that you had with putting music into the play, where you got the music and where you got the performers to put on what could be argued is a musical?
Well, that could be argued that it is a musical. You know, you could also say it's a play that has music in it because oftentimes what the music in this particular play does is underline or underscore the action. That is to say, the music of the movement, music of the civil rights movement was there because it offered an anchor in hope. And as it always has with most cultures, particularly the African American culture, it is always offered an anchor in the spiritual world, as well as given each participant hope through song, through singing these spirituals, through singing these freedom songs, they can see some hope down the line. Perhaps they won't be getting out of jail today, but they'll be getting out of jail tomorrow. But more people will come, more rioters will come, and music itself, in my opinion, is is such an intricate part of the civil rights movement that it had to be in the play. Not only that, but it's an intravenous thing, music is. It goes right to the veins. And when these guys sing, when they sing, I woke up this morning with my mind on freedom, or
eyes on the prize,
or even some of those more fun tunes that have been directly taken from popular culture, like Calypso, you know, Deo song that
the modification,
the modification, of Deo made into Calypso Freedom. Those songs offer hope, and they go straight to the veins. For an audience member, you know, you don't have to think. To tap your foot.
The music brings you back to in time or to the time.
Absolutely.
Or to the time that you first heard these songs.
And not only that, what I'm looking for as a playwright and a director is for the music to reach the inner core of the person. That is to say, for the music to make a person think about that person's own life. The words of the song making that person go, what in my life and have I done that this music inspires?
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, you guys can throw rocks at me if you want to, but
done.
You've got an African-American presidential candidate who is under attack as we're talking. And where does he go to deliver, you know, a message of rescue and hope for himself is to music. It's amazing. You know, one of the verses of Amazing Grace. I mean, y'all have been working. Mm-hmm. You may not have even seen this, but Hurricane is singing now to as a part of his justification for
Herman Cain.
Yeah.
His when people request that he sings at the end of press conferences.
Yeah, he just sings. I mean, and it's so.
I have my thoughts on that. I won't.
Well, you share it with us.
Yeah,
well, we're not talking about politics. We're talking about culture and about the ability of music. This is your point, the ability of music to move people and put a different light on a serious subject. Mm-hmm. And the you know, part of the great contribution of the African American experience to the rest of us is that there is a greater degree, particularly in churches, of the enthusiasm for this music and the washing away of all kinds of things, bringing back. So yeah, this music is a part of it.
Absolutely, and it's and as well as the humor that's in the
now,
play.
Can you all sing for me? I mean, you got. I mean, these guys.
Doug can.
Did you guys?
You got it, Doug.
Did you recruit these guys as singers or as actors or both? These are ordinary actors who happen to have, some of them happen to have singing ability, and you've just let them loose.
Is that
the way it worked?
Absolutely. I mean, I cast them for their acting ability first, and then said, okay, now you got to sing these songs. And these guys have been with the production since the student workshop.
Uh-huh.
So they've been with the production over a year. Keep in mind, you know, it was a student production, then it went to Mississippi, and it went to Mississippi twice. So it's been here and there as a student production. And as I said, these guys have been with it since the beginning. And over the summer, I did some tinkering with it and added some songs and took some songs away and gave them some solos, which they weren't familiar with. But they tackle it with
so Doug can sing
ability.
For us. John Lewis wouldn't know whether he can sing or not. I mean, yeah, I think all black people can sing. I mean, you know, that's part of the, you know.
I wish that were the case.
I know.
I wish that were
now,
the case.
Now, Michael, can you not, I mean, you're a musician, but you, I mean, you bring music into your productions.
I bring music into my productions.
But you got no talent.
I bring professionals along with me that know music well enough to speak. You know, I was smart enough to know, you know, specifically Ed Butler, who works as a musician.
So you get help.
Exactly.
Where you get it
and they speak the language. I know what I like. And I think that's a case for a lot of directors. You know what you like. You know what you want. And then you have great collaborators in places like
that. The most important question is, can you make Doug sing for us?
I can't make Doug sing. I can request that Doug sing and try and sing on tune.
Can you sing a cappella? Can you just a touch of something from the play?
Oh, well, let's see.
Just a touch.
You could start that freedom.
He'll join in with you.
I feel painfully for the sound guys if they have their headphones on. They've already adjusted this for speaking volume, but
true because it comes out
just a little bit. Give us a little
freedom.
Hey, you know.
Give us free. Give us free. Give us freedom.
All right now.
Freedom's coming and it won't be long.
Oh, now I just... You know. All right, we'll take a break, and I'll try to persuade him to do more. We're talking about the Parchment Hour, the Playmakers world premiere production. We've got three of the most important people, and we'll get to hear more from them after this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. We're visiting about the Parchment Hour. That's the Playmakers' current production. It's a world premiere production. The playwright, Mike Wiley, is with us, and he's brought two of the important actors, Doug Bynum, who plays John Lewis, and Kashif Powell, who plays Stokely Carmichael. And talking about casting Mike Wiley, I was interested in the idea, and you, I mean, you're comfortable with this because you've done all of these single productions where you play white people, black people, women and children and everything. So no big problem for you to put on your white accent or your deep black accent or a southern white southerner's redneck accent. You can do it all. So you've crossed that bridge, but many of us haven't crossed the bridge of seeing black people in white roles or just the opposite.
And, you know, and there's a philosophy behind behind that casting. First of all, the simple philosophy I came to is if I can do it, who am I to say that that these other folks can't do it? Because I wasn't going to do it at first. I said, "Oh,
you were going to race cast.
I was going to have everybody play the characters that of their race." And but folks came into casting that were just too good.
Good not to put in.
Right.
Exactly.
Kelsey
so what
Didion,
did it didn't who, start out who, to be? Hey, I've got. I'm going to show everybody that we can do this. It was. Who can do the role the best?
And right, and
we'll
that's how it should always be, really. And and it came down to, you know what? What I was about to say was, the one actress in the play is Kelsey Didion, who's been on Playmaker stage a number of times, and she not only plays two men, she plays Bill Savano, who was from Wisconsin, by way of New York, and so on and so forth. And she also plays a deep Southerner in Bull Connor. So therefore, she plays two men, and she does it quite well. She also plays a woman. She plays Joan Trumbauer Mulholland. So she has the opportunity to play two men and a woman, and she does it fantastically. The idea being that if we mix it up in this gumbo, this American gumbo, of whites playing blacks, blacks playing whites, men playing women, women playing men, then an audience member has the opportunity to go deeper than race, to go to the core of themselves, to look at that stage and say, where do I fit in? Where have I fit in? Who am I to say that this particular person is not behaving the way a black person would behave? Or who am I to say that this particular woman is behaving as a man or a woman or any number of things or any number of ways? But the idea being that the audience then takes a step forward, leans into it, and becomes, rather than keeping it all at arm's length and saying, this is a black play or this is a white play or this is a play about the Freedom Riders. No, this is a play about America and it's a play about me.
Yeah, I like that. I think, but you do have to push your audience. Your audience comes at it at from different standpoints.
Absolutely,
and still
people want to hold
resisting the idea that hey, if you got Martin Luther King, no white guy can do that. No white guy can play Martin Luther King or John Lewis.
Right.
There are some
boundaries, some borders that I gave myself that I knew that I had to.
Maybe one day.
You know, I knew that I couldn't have a white female playing Stokely Carmichael because quite a few audience members wouldn't buy that. They just would resist for, you know, a greater portion of the play, and they would miss the, you know, a quarter or a half of the play because they're too busy wondering why Stokely Carmichael is being played by a white woman. So, yes, in that respect, I couldn't have that
a stumbling block for some people, maybe. You got a black woman playing Robert Kennedy.
Absolutely.
And somehow that works. I mean, but it might not work, might not have worked for everybody. I mean, so you got, that's a little block. So you get them over that block, then maybe next time you can get them over the next block.
It's true.
And
that's entirely possible. But they, again, going back to the idea, and I'd love to hear from these guys their thoughts on being on the inside of it. But really, truly, for me, the idea is that that if we're all going to live in this together, if we're all going to, that is to say, live in this society, live in this world, live in America together, then we've got to get past the issues of color. That's obvious, right? So as a director, as a writer, as a theater goer, we've got to get past seeing African Americans on stage and just automatically thinking that they're going to play.
Well, let's close. We're about out of time, but I'd love to, if you can get them to make a quick comment, a reaction.
Yeah, I think absolutely that having cross-gender and cross-racial casting helps the audience, in a certain sense, to kind of take things a little bit lighter. So it immediately, we have assumptions when we walk into a theater and we're about to see a production. And so it kind of throws you off a little bit so that then you're ready to accept the world that you're given.
And I also think it's reflective of the Freedom Rides themselves, right?
Absolutely.
We had so many different bodies of different colors and genders, races, nationalities on those buses fighting for the same thing. And that's what we're doing. We're telling the same story on stage. We're telling their story. And so I think it hits that right on the head.
Well, thanks, Kashif Powell. And thynks, Doug Bynum. And thanks to you, Mike Wiley, for play, for the performance, and for sharing it with us here on WCHL.
Thank you for the dialogue.
And thanks to you for listening. It's been D.G. Martin, Who's Talking, and I'll be back right here before you know it.